Welcome to The Last American Vagabond. I have a special guest joining me today that I'm sure you're all excited to be seeing again. Whitney Webb here to talk about a lot of stuff that we have been seeing over the process of the evolution of the COVID illusion, of cyber attacks, of seemingly false flag, anthrax, Rand Paul discussions popping up. I mean, there's so many things that we could talk about today that Whitney Webb has, to a large degree, called. Said what happened, called crazy, you know, the whole rigmarole that we all go through today. But we're going to go through and talk about all this stuff, as well as a lot of other things, as we just like to do, have a good conversation about what's going on today. So Whitney Webb, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Hey, doing well. Much better than I was, for sure. So hopefully you'll be seeing more of me from now on. I certainly hope that to be the case. So,
well, great, great. Good to hear. Well, you know, it's just always good to make sure that we, you know, as I always say, right, it's we got to take care of ourselves first. That's the most important thing, because if you're not healthy, we're not healthy, then the work will stop happening.
Well, I definitely didn't do that. You know, I was actually super burnout after my Epstein series and all the spinoffs from that at the end of 2019. Mm-hmm. you know, then COVID happened. I was like, I have to keep going, you know, so that's pretty much, you know, how it's been until I kind of stopped sleeping last year. And, you know, now I really just have to take care of myself. You can only push yourself so far. The good thing is, you know, I feel like my sacrifices in that sense, in the sense of no personal time spending less time with my kid and stuff, which is really unfortunate. You know, had an impact. You know, I definitely had some people that I didn't expect to follow my work reach out and say they're following, some people with pretty big platforms. You know, that's pretty nice to know that it's getting out there and people are seeing it. Even reports that I wrote, you know, last March and last January and stuff that people have recently discovered. So
I just got a clip from a doctor pointing out your work and saying, you know, Whitney Webb called this back in the day, you know, someone that doesn't have any real discernible connection to our circles, but yet, you know, it's interesting to see. And I was just going to say, and as well as the good, you know, well, the good guys, but the bad guys, right? DARPA openly following you, which is just very chilling.
Yeah. And Peter Thiel's like number two dude, and Jack Dorsey. I mean, I don't really like those people following me, but I kind of, you know. It's fine. They might as well see what I have to say, especially when I shit on Peter Thiel. I hope his number two guy passes that right up onto him.
Right.
So you know, the emperor himself can look at me with scorn. You know,
it definitely speaks
volumes. That guy.
It definitely speaks volumes. I mean, if they're following, it says something. It's interesting to, you know, at the very least, that they're going to point to you and be like, this person's ridiculous, crazy conspiracy theorist, but they all follow you. It's like, okay, that doesn't line up, you know, but to talk about that exactly.
Well, a lot of them have actually avoided saying that about me. Like Naomi Klein from The Intercept, for example, follows me, and she lifted from the report I did for T-Lab last year, the National Security Commission on AI. And then she put out a report later saying, oh, people are talking about the Great Reset are crazy. She didn't mention me by name, though.
Of course.
You know, these people anyway.
It's much more difficult to name and call out a person you want to be called crazy, who they can then look at and go, well, wait a minute, she's clearly sourcing her material.
Yeah, I think that's why they don't name me a lot of the time, because then people be like, well, let's see how crazy she is. And I don't think they want to draw attention to my work. I think it was the same deal with that with Epstein. You know, like I had Julie Brown, the Miami Herald lady. People would be like, have you read her stuff? And she wouldn't say my name. And she's being like, I've looked at all the supposed evidence for intelligence ties to Epstein, and I've seen nothing. Well, I'm sure your fancy HarperCollins book deal for millions of dollars requires that you see nothing there.
Right.
So
let's just ignore the on-the-record discussions of Acosta openly stating this in his discussion with the administration.
These articles from like 2001 where Epstein says, yes, I used to work directly for the CIA, you know, or the ones that talk about people in the New York social circle being like, oh, well, we all pretty much know he either works for CIA, Mossad, or both.
She just didn't see that in her extensive due diligence, right? You know, it's just these are people that know with their marching orders, you know. Even more so, it's an interesting thing before we get into the Oracle thing, is that there's a level of this where these people, some of them are liars. They just know they're being dishonest and are just flat out trying to deceive for an agenda. But there are a level of these, even at high levels, I think, in my opinion, that they have decided that they're right because they trust the right people. And that's in their mind, that is due diligence. Like they've actually been so warped that they think, oh, well, CDC said this, so it's fact then. And even if they change that 2 days later, they go, well, now that's fact. They said it, so now it's fact. You know, and I wonder if they even realize that they're being ridiculous. You know,
I don't think so. I mean, this was my impression going through the U.S. public school system. I don't know if you had this impression, but in like history classes and stuff, they like teach you, oh, this is the birth of the U.S. government. The state, it is so great. Look at how it has grown and progressed over time into this marvelous thing that does all this great stuff. It's like your parents. It's like your father. It's never going to hurt you and all of this stuff, you know? So like, okay. I think a lot of people sort of internalize that. And there's also the fact that like, you know, I've encountered this a lot in trying to talk to people about 9/11 truth that aren't necessarily, you know, willing to engage with that information. You bring up a point that they can't really deny, and you see kind of that look in their eye, and they're kind of like, you know what? I don't want to live in a world that's like this, even if it's the truth. They'd rather like not acknowledge that the government is what it is and controlled by the people that control it, or the intelligence agencies, what they actually do and all of this stuff. So they prefer to live in the world they've been told exists. And you know, but it's getting harder and harder to be able to do that, especially as we get closer, as this fourth industrial revolution push advances. And really, what people are going to have to end up realizing here is the specific transhumanist angle of that is a human species extinction threat. It's quite big. You can't really ignore that indefinitely.
And that's not hyperbole, right? I mean, James Corbett did a really good article, you know. Walking, it's very easy. This is not that that's James Corbett did an excellent job in this article, but this is an easy thing to point out, right? And this is what's so crazy is it's obvious, and they're stating this in their open discussions and documentation. But he points out the very clear reality that they're openly discussing this. Excuse me, or I talk about the 2002 document where they discuss the altering evolution with nanotechnology. Yeah. Now they're talking about the crossover, right? We're going to now begin to change your human body so it works better for illness, or it works better for so-and-so. I've gone over all the documents on the show. So just for those listening, that, you know, that's a real thing. If you're talking about altering the way humanity exists, that will eventually go to a point to where we're no longer even, you know, discernibly human. So that's, you know, whether they see it as an extinction or as an evolution, it's alarming regardless, you know, and it's all about how you see it.
Well, I actually just learned something today from a guy who's a new contributor to my site, Unlimited Hangout, and his first article is going to be up soon. And it was just, my mouth was agape by the end of it. And I'm probably going to butcher his last name because we haven't like talked in person. So I think it's John Klizek. I'm hoping I'm saying it right. Anyway, he wrote a lot about this agenda, specifically about changing the education system for the fourth industrial revolution and how it goes back decades and decades and decades. And he documents it all going back to the 70s. And he had something in there that I'd actually never heard before, which is really fascinating, that the term transhumanism was coined in a 1957 book by Julian Huxley. Yes, the relative of Aldous Huxley of Brave New World fame. Julian Huxley was the first head of UNESCO at the UN that was actually a big part of gaming out this fourth industrial revolution remake with all this tech and all of this stuff, you know, for the education system back then. But what he should be best known for is for being president of the Eugenics Society, the British Eugenics Society, which included very famous people at the time, John Maynard Keynes, the economist, Winston Churchill, the prime minister. And of course, Margaret Sanger was involved in some other prominent people as well. And he framed transhumanism and the future of genetic engineering and this push to get machines, merge humans with machines, as the next phase of eugenics.
And what date was this you're talking about? Were they discussed
1957?
That?
This is a 1957 book. And Julian Huxley, the Huxleys are, you know, part of the elite of British society at the time, and their descendants still are today. And the British Eugenics Society still exists. It's called the Galton Institute. They didn't bother taking eugenics out of their name until 1989. And today it's populated with very prominent professors who have not been forced out of their positions for being an openly eugenicist group. They teach at places like King's College London, Imperial College London, and a lot of prominent universities very involved in what's going on with COVID-19, specifically in the UK. And, you know, they're allowed to do this. And one of the people there, that's the secretary, whose last name is also Galton, who I'm not sure if he's related to the Sir Francis Galton, who the Institute is now named for, who's actually the father of eugenics. They took eugenics out of the name in 1989, then names it after the guy that created eugenics. It's nuts. Right. It's not, no, but he wrote a book called Eugenics in the 21st Century. And he says the same thing. that genetic engineering enables a whole new area of eugenics. So I really think people need to realize that transhumanist is something very different from maybe what you've been sold by these people.
I'm just talking about this. Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead. I thought you were done. Go ahead.
No. I'm happy to stop.
Well, we were just talking about this on the show, and this feels like this next evolution of all of this. The genetic aspect of it is just the, or even like thinking about it like this, like the bioweapon production in BSL4 labs, right? Where up until now it's been, you know, under the guise of vaccines, it's almost like they're doing the exact same thing in public, in the open now, in our bodies.
And the line between vaccine and gain of function is very thin. And I honestly think that a lot of what's going on with this vaccination campaign and why the drive is so intense and why the whole definition of vaccine has been changed and all of this stuff is because it very well could lead to a situation where there is a gain of function thing that results from the vaccine, just because so much research that is used to create these vaccines involves gain of function of the virus. And stuff like that. And now the supposed worst part of the virus, the spike protein and these mRNA vaccines, is being produced by people's cells that receive this injection in unknown quantities for an unknown duration of time with largely unknown effects, particularly in the long term.
Yeah. So, I want to talk about the spike protein since you brought that up. But before that, I had a couple of questions things that I want you to touch on in general. One was that it's interesting, the Galton Institute is definitely connected, and I know you wrote about this, but just people in the show to hear the vaccine today, right?
That's the AstraZeneca vaccine specifically, which is the COVAX vaccine meant to go to largely the third world, and it's been banned by numerous countries and other parts of the world because of the issues it's caused, which obviously are underreported because vaccine injuries are always vastly underreported. So the fact that multiple governments would ban that vaccine
And then
despite that banning, have it given to the third world is very disconcerting. And if you look at this guy that developed it, Adrian Hill, he spoke at the 100-year anniversary of the Galton Institute, and a lot of people he works for are intimately involved with it, including also as well people that work directly under him. Mm-hmm. Very concerning. And he works for one of the Wellcome Trust institutes. And the Wellcome Trust is basically the philanthropic arm of GlaxoSmithKline, which, like Pfizer and all these other companies, has a litany of corruption and abuses and scandals behind its name. But in particular, the Wellcome Trust was also very involved with the British Eugenics Society, preserved all of their writings. When they like launched their medical records archive, instead of archiving actual medical records, they archived the Eugenics Society whole like library, because they're like, this is so important to preserve. And they whitewash it. They call Francis Galton an insane racist eugenicist. They call him a talented 19th century polymath. Okay, losers. That's not what he was. He's a pseudoscience. And the guy's, you know, ideas fueled like Nazi Germany and stuff.
Right.
Which, by the way, you know, those institutes that became those Nazi eugenics program hotspots, funded with Rockefeller money. And of course, the Rockefeller Foundation is still at it today. Yep. What do you know? And no one cares. And there's been no follow up for them, even though it came out a couple months ago that David Rockefeller personally appointed Jeffrey Epstein to the board of Rockefeller University in like the year 2000. And it was Leon Black who said that.
Okay. The Rockefellers tied to the previous research regarding coronaviruses before this hit, or the
absolutely. There's infinite other stuff, but you know, I mean, it's open season generally to dunk on people with Epstein ties, and Rockefeller never came in the conversation.
And that's an excellent point. I just mean in regard to specifically the idea of, we're talking the Galton Institute, or all these the points we're pointing to all tie back to open eugenics funding efforts, projects, and now they're all the same people funding the direction of the what we're talking about, of the genetics of the vaccine. It's just so obvious that there's something to point out, but it's conspiracy theory, right? The other thing was the Imperial College, just for people to remind them, as you point out, they're also tied to this, are the ones that that basically started this with their fake statistics that completely
they're modeling.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's my opinion. Obviously, they're modeling, which is obviously incredibly fantastically wrong that was based on their opinions when you dive into it.
Well, what's amazing is that Neil Ferguson and his whole crew were involved in a huge scandal for modeling over, what was it, like foot and mouth disease in cattle. And I think that was it, and like forced the mass culling of a bunch of livestock needlessly. And then he's allowed to do that for people. Great.
Right. It's more than one, though. I don't have it off the top of my head, but there's been multiple instances before this where he's been catastrophically wrong.
It's like, let's keep using the guy that's always wrong, just like Space Force is like, let's hire Elon Musk, the guy whose products always explode, to be our main contractor. It all makes perfect sense.
I think it actually does, because I think they want the person that will do that, right? They want it to go the way they want. They want the guy who's going to lie the way they want them to. That's
Well, sure.
And then Elon
Musk is going to take people to Mars, but they're not actually going to go to Mars. They're going to get a chip in their head and think they're in Mars.
That's a scary thought right there. You know what? That sounds exactly what makes sense today. Completely honest. That's a scary thought.
Nothing would surprise me anymore. I mean, for people that want to shit all over me, that was obviously a joke. I don't
know. Yeah, always the morons out there that dump down anything. But the last point was the 1950s to today. And that is the overarching point here, guys, is they have been working on this stuff, as she mentioned, 1958 or 3, I forget the date exactly.
57.
And we're still today doing the exact same thing. Like, this is a direction that's always been the point, and it's being driven through now under the guise of COVID, and we just didn't realize that. I mean,
military has been hugely involved with this since, like, the 60s on, really.
Right, right. And that's, and to your point, and you're the one that really kind of really pointed this out, this whole thing is a military operation. I mean, it's obvious. Yeah. And even still, now that Biden's taken over, I mean, it's almost been more pronounced, in my opinion, with the military involvement.
Location, well, you know? Biden is very obviously controlled and backed by Silicon Valley. The DNC and Silicon Valley have fused, but Silicon Valley has also fused with the military and the intelligence communities. So, I mean, that's why you're seeing it function like that. They're essentially the same blob at this point. And as I've tried to point out in my work, Silicon Valley from the beginning was created by the military and intelligence communities. It's not like, oh, these are some guys in their garages that were just tinkering around and they built these giant empires. I mean, come on. Elon Musk's business empire wouldn't exist without like over $4 billion in government subsidies. You think they just give that to like everyone's business? Obviously not.
Yeah. They want something in return. That's the point.
Obviously. Well, I think that's pretty clear.
Let's touch on that, because that's an interesting thing. And I see we're all over Spike Protein. We'll talk about all this stuff at some point. But
there's infinite stuff to cover.
Exactly. This is interesting how you've talked about this in the past. And I always find this so fascinating with where we are currently. I look at the broad picture. I do my best to not try to define it as, even though there are different groups within it, but the government doing this, because there is an overarching agenda that seems pretty clear. But we've talked in the past about how there are divides here, different like Silicon Valley cyber. So how do you see that playing out in the current situation? Like, and even maybe bringing in the cyber attacks. You know, and how that's playing in. Are they on the same page here? Or, you know, so how do you see that going with the...
So who's on the same page with who? Silicon Valley and who else?
Well, in the past, you've discussed this as being sort of like two different, you know, blobs, as you've pointed out.
Different factions.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to know. But yeah, I think there are different factions in the elite right now. And I think one is obviously the one involved with the WEF. And one is more sort of doesn't really like the idea of global governance as much, and maybe some other things they disagree on. Sorry, you're cutting out for me, so I can't hear exactly what you said.
We're having a little bit of... So you said WEF, do you mean World Economic Forum?
Yeah, that's what I meant by WEF. Okay. Can you hear me yet? It says my signal's fine, so I don't know. Yeah.
You're good.
Oh, I'm fine. Okay.
Yeah. Looks like we just had a little connectivity issues, but go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. So I haven't really looked at this in a while. For a while, I sort of thought it might be sort of like the Zionist crowd against the WEF. But now that I've looked into the WEF, the World Economic Forum Center for Cybersecurity, which I'm going to be writing about for T-Lab soon, so tied up with Israeli intelligence, it's insane. And so there's a lot going on there. But I think actually, just looking at that faction in particular, the Zionist faction, the Zionist elite and the billionaires and all that stuff who fund, right, you know, Zionist candidates in Israel and also in the U.S., what have you, these mega group guys and some other ones. There's actually been divisions there. And a lot of it has to do, from how it looks, with Netanyahu. So you have someone like Ronald Lauder, a mega group billionaire who actually got Netanyahu in power originally in 1996, head of the World Jewish Congress. You know, he rebuked Netanyahu pretty intensely a couple years ago. Even Leslie Wexner, before the Epstein arrest in 2019, you know, was very anti-Trump and stuff, despite Trump being very pro-Zionist and very cozy with Netanyahu. So I think there are some rifts there. And I think that's probably true for every sort of power faction in the global elite. You know, they want different things, or they don't like where things are going. They're not willing to go that far in service to the ultimate agenda, which, you know, as we mentioned, the whole transhumanist thing really means, and as James Corbett's pointed out, really means like a human extinction event at the end of the day. And so I think a lot of these people don't necessarily want that, think there's ways to control and implement, you know, sort of this Orwellian system, but not go that far and all of this stuff, or they don't want to go that far that quickly. I think that's where a lot of these divisions end up. And it's really hard to know exactly what's going on. But I think it's honestly like every faction has people that are like, I don't know if I want to do that. And there's rifts and splits happening in the elite. And I think that's ultimately going to be a key part of their downfall, is this extreme infighting, because a lot of these people are arrogant. They think, you know, the lower class to them are all idiots. They think they're superior. I mean, that's why they're eugenicists, right? A lot of them, you know, and they think they should be the stewards of the future of humanity and all of this stuff. And we'll never figure it out and whatever. But, you know, the more they infight, the more mistakes they make, the more things will fall apart, the more stuff will get exposed. You know, it's just not going the way they had hoped. And what's interesting is that this is the year where Klaus Schwab, back in January at Davos Agenda Week, a really important speech. People should go back and find it. I'll have to look for the link if I can and post it. Because basically Schwab like laid out how he thought the whole year was going to go. And a lot of it has been attempted to happen. So for example, he starts off by saying first COVID, the current fear climate around COVID-19 is going to be phased out and replaced with climate change. Right. Well, Project Veritas came in and got that CNN technical director, you know, basically saying that was the case. And so that kind of got blown open for a large portion of the populace. Not that I'm supporting necessarily Project Veritas, because they're tied with Eric Prince and some shady stuff seems to go on there. But in that particular case, it did reveal that there was this agenda going on behind the scenes, as well as Klaus Schwab had predicted. And before that, though, if you remember back, Bill Gates, before it was open season to dunk on him all over again, he basically did this media blitz tour like he did last year for COVID-19, but on climate change. And he was going around talking about his new book and all that stuff and making the rounds, trying to switch the narrative to that. And so I think that's very telling. But what he also emphasized, Schwab does in this speech, is that this is the year we need to focus on rebuilding trust with the public, because the public doesn't trust the corporations and all of these other groups that we want to come in and take over everything, because stakeholder capitalism is a consortium of stakeholder corporations that want to create a global government and rule the world. I mean, that's like global fascism on a huge scale. Yikes.
But don't worry, they'll feed you and clothe you and take care of you, though.
Okay. Thanks. Right. They're so good at that now. No, sorry. Right, these people are so crazy. So obviously, in order to sell that to the public, they have to get restore trust in some institutions. I think that's why now a lot of stuff that was supposedly conspiracy last year is now being sort of brought out in a limited hangout way. It seems like Fauci might get in trouble. It seems like Bill Gates is getting in trouble. And they may frame this as, look, there's accountability. And look, the mainstream media does investigate and figure stuff out. Exactly. And ignoring the work of people like you, me, and numerous other independent, you know, journalists and outlets that deserve credit for covering this stuff when it was controversial and took the risk to do it at the time. Of course, a lot of outlets and independent media did not do that. But now it's being, you know, it's open season for that. And I think it, you know, it sort of feeds into this. But also, you know, they need people to like the Silicon Valley companies again. And that's not really working very well because so many of them are going to be building and pitching these services that they want you to buy into, specifically in healthcare. All this Microsoft healthcare, Google healthcare, Amazon healthcare, all the Fitbits and the wearables and all of this stuff. They want people to adopt massively. And if people are like, oh, those assholes censor me and surveil me and all this stuff, people aren't going to do it. So they're trying to restore trust, you know, in some sense. I forgot why I got on this tangent and what you were the faction power battle. Right. So, you know, this infighting among them really threatens that agenda of rebuilding trust. So I think people that are in the space and people that are just, you know, active and talking to, you know, their friends and family and whoever about this type of information should keep that in mind, that these people are trying to manipulate the public to trust them again. And we need to exploit that weakness as much as possible. But they're also really stupid to not realize how much people hate them on such a large level, and how mainstream media has totally cratered you know, it's any sort of support it really has with the public. I mean, there are, you know, the people that will always believe MSNBC, no matter how ridiculous it gets, or CNN or whatever, but you know, it's getting smaller by the day.
Oh, yeah, thank God. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's pretty clear too, but since you bring this up, it's an interesting thing that I was holding this off and I keep skipping over this, but you've seen this already. I think you've even written about this, but Microsoft, Singa, formed Coalition for Digital Records and COVID Vaccination, mm-hmm. right? This was in January 14th, 2021. But I just thought it was interesting. I'm now seeing this, and it kind of ties in with this sort of like cryptocurrency tracking future discussion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is one of these cryptocurrencies. Algo has powered the first blockchain-based COVID passport in Latin America.
Yikes. Right? Okay. Chile is going to be the first one to do that. They launched their domestic vaccine passport specifically for domestic use on Wednesday, and it's even worse than Israel's, if you can believe it.
Well, remember, this was a totally fake news nuts. Story. Right. This totally big news when we wrote about it before.
Here's
the interesting part, though. Xfinity and the Algorand company doing that strategic partnership. And guess who Xfinity partners with? Microsoft.
Shocking. Oops.
Right. So it's not a hard thing to realize, but it's just the trail is there for people to realize that it's always tied back to the same individuals. Right. And it's very obvious. And then remember this, so we don't forget, Microsoft patent describes tracking brain activity to mine cryptocurrency. Right. It's all very obvious. But it's pretty interesting how these things have been pointed out routinely, such as this one, and we continue to get dismissed. And now they're covering the same things you just talked about. So it's an interesting evolution of the process. You know, there's many things to discuss on this whole thing. Are these talking heads in the mainstream aware that they look stupid reporting on what they said was ridiculous 3 months ago, you know, or do they not know that, kind of speaking to the same thing that now it is fact because now they said it, you know, I mean, it's an interesting thing, right? So
yeah, well, there's a lot of stuff I don't think they're accounting for. First of all, even people that bought all this stuff, even like most of last year, are starting to be personally affected by the arbitrary retardedness of these government regulations and all this stuff. And it's pretty obvious it's not about a virus to a lot more people than ever. And the more personally affected people are, the more likely they are to start looking for truth about the situation and looking elsewhere, and they can't control that.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they want to keep this arbitrary stuff going on forever, and their excuses, especially in the UK, I mean, they've really run out of excuses here. You know, before it was like, we have to protect the NHS, and we had to do this to protect the vulnerable. Well, most of the NHS workers and the vulnerable have all been vaccinated, and they still claim that the vaccine's protecting everyone, but still saying they need a new lockdown and hospitalizations are lower than they've ever been. And I mean, it's ridiculous. And then freedom of information requests in the UK, one of the biggest NHS trusts, like hospital systems over here, said refused to disclose how many people died from COVID-19 alone as the main cause of death in their hospital system, saying it was too low to disclose and that it was under 5.
Right.
That is scandalous. But that's not being covered by the media here, obviously. And instead they're saying, oh, we should have locked down sooner. There's this like whistleblower, former senior advisor to Boris Johnson, Dominic Cummings, who's all over the news. And, you know, they're going to use this, obviously, to fearmonger more about the Indian variant and justify a lockdown probably at some point at the end of June or July. You know, we'll see how it pans out. But you know, it's really only if the people allow it at this point. But it's honestly just like very ridiculous, the narrative. And I think more and more people are going to start looking for stuff, even people that have never questioned any of the stuff in their lives. are starting to be like, this really isn't starting to make sense to me, because their own narratives are tripping over each other. And the flip-flopping is really obvious, even to people that don't even really pay that much attention to this stuff. And they're going to lose control. And they're specifically going, I think we're going to start seeing bigger freakouts when these, some of these countries like the US and the UK fail to meet their vaccination targets that they're very insistent about meeting. So I forget what the US's is, but I know that Biden like opened it up to all adults in April. So they're going to wait a couple months. And if it's not the percentage they need it to be at for whatever reason, why do they need, you know, this amount? They say it's for herd immunity, but they've changed the definition of herd immunity. So it's silly. Right. So that's obviously not what it is, because you have even Johns Hopkins professors saying at least half of the US population has natural herd immunity. So if like another big percentage is vaccinated, shouldn't that be all of it? You know, so obviously there's something else going on here. But in the UK, they're planning to have all adults vaccinated by the end of July. If that doesn't happen, obviously, they're going to probably lose their shit and try and make things harder for people. And they'll probably try and roll up the vaccine passport thing. But there's a lot of local resistance to that here. I do not see it flying.
This is they're overtly ignoring everything. I mean, like to your point, and this is shaking people that would never have normally woken up to how they're lying.
Yeah.
It's so obvious. I mean, how they're ignoring, just like Israel did, even though they're rolling back their passports, at least they're claiming that now, maybe they got what they wanted out of it, but they're ignoring natural immunity across the board. Here's NIH admitting in January 2021 that lasting immunity is found after COVID-19 naturally.
There's an agenda here though. And I talked about it in the article about the effort to make a DARPA, the health DARPA that was actually pitched under Trump. It's not Biden's idea.
Right.
Because basically what the purpose of this is and how they want to change the health care sector around the world for the fourth industrial revolution is about eliminating the concept of immunity, period. Not just to COVID, but to any disease. And the idea that the only way you can treat illness is by having robotic medicines or gene edited medicines. Personalized medicine is how they're framing it. Personalized to your genome and all of this stuff is how they frame it. And that you need to have wearables monitoring you and all this stuff. And they're trying to change the definition of what it means to be healthy and what health is and what medicine is. And what's fascinating in the UK specifically is that they're pretty openly talking about replacing the NHS with NHSX, which is basically all telemedicine and all of this stuff for the foreseeable future, saying that it's not to overwhelm the NHS and all of this stuff. But you know, that's not really the case anymore. It's definitely, you know, like I said, the narratives are starting to trip over themselves, but this is how, this is the end game here is to get that sort of transhumanist stuff in under the guise of medicine and make that the norm and eliminate the idea that there's an immune system, that your immune system doesn't work, that this virus or the next virus or this disease or this condition, your body can't fight it. There's no natural cure and all of this stuff. When obviously, you know, for ever since the Flexner Report in the early 20th century, they've been suppressing natural cures that have been known to work for thousands of years since then, on and off. And of course, it's the Rockefeller family that is tied back to that and the origins of the American Medical Association. In order to favor pharmaceutical companies that have ties to all of these actors that we've been talking about. So, you know, I want to remind people, too, that the military has a lot of ties to the pharmaceutical industry in the U.S. The best example I like to offer is Donald Rumsfeld. You may remember him back from the Iraq War and George W. Bush before that. He was the top executive at Gilead Pharmaceuticals. Before that, it was J.D. Searle & Co., which became part of Monsanto. J.D. Searle & Co. is responsible for aspartame, which never should have been approved. They suppressed everything, and it's still in your food today. Uh-huh. Still in it. And it killed all the mice in the trials and called this cancer and all this stuff. I mean, it's insane. So, you know.
Didn't he something like $5 million during the anthrax situation as well? Wasn't that?
It was the bird flu scare. Okay. When they over-exaggerated a pandemic to raise the price of Tamiflu, basically, which Gilead had a monopoly on at the time. Good times. He didn't get in trouble for that.
Exactly. Exactly. Here is just an article I'll include that I wrote a long time ago, March 3rd, 2016. The true history of deceit within the rise of Western medicine, which goes over the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the Flexner Report, the AMA.
Right.
You know, just so people can understand that history a little more. I wanted to point out this and just to the same discussion. This is back on, this is updated May 12th, 2021, but this is from the UK. From as of March 19, 2020, and you've seen this, which they're saying COVID's no longer considered to be a high consequence infectious disease. This is the kind of stuff we're talking about where average people are going, okay, wait a minute. How is it possible that we're simultaneously in a national emergency that's bigger than we've ever seen in 100 years, but you can say it's not serious? That, you know what I mean? Like this is blowing people away right now. And I think this is what I was saying in regard to how you can't lie about everything without eventually turning around and stepping on a previous lie, which is what you just mentioned. And that's what's happening right now. And that's why
they've backed themselves into a corner narrative wise, and it's going to wake up way too many people. And I think they're going to start freaking out about it.
I think
and
it's already
happening. We have to keep in mind once they start realizing that they've lost control, I mean, they're going to lash out and do some crazy shit. And I think that's why this UFO stuff, among other things, are getting rolled out, because they're like, well, we got to keep people scared somehow. And we can talk about what I think the agenda really is there at a later point if you want. But there was a point I wanted to bring up that I saw in the paper here today, quoting this guy, Andrew Pollard, who I believe is head of the Oxford Vaccine Group. And it was about COVID-19 in a main newspaper here. And he's saying, well, the thing that makes this a pandemic is hospitalizations. And I'm like, oh, my God, the goalpost has moved so much. Okay, so what makes this a pandemic is the amount of people in the hospital, but the amount of people in the hospital is like the lowest it's ever been since last March or whatever. So the pandemic's over. And he basically says, once people stop going to the hospital for COVID, the pandemic's over. But that's not how this is supposed to work. And all the vocabulary for all of this stuff has been totally flipped around and inverted and messed with, so that no one knows what's up or down with these words anymore when people use them. I mean, they've lost their meaning.
That's the point. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was trying to find the one that you originally shared in regard to the Plymouth Hospital, but it wasn't just Plymouth, by the way, the Plymouth Group anyway. I ended up following up on this on the show, which I believe you pointed out as well.
Yeah, there's several
hospital groups in the UK that have all said the same thing, that they under five or two.
But they were
two
all locked down.
Right.
Yeah, and if you read the local media,
I was just going to say, the important thing to understand is that this is an illusion in and of itself. The reality is that these hospitals closed down most of the other locations, which they could have been using, right? They don't allow cancer patients, diabetes, people are all struggling, and they have the emergency area, which can be 15 to 20 beds max. And that overflows, and they say, we're overflowing. We don't have enough room. And by and large, that's what's happening. So it's an illusion, just like all of it. They're playing with
Well, they have those emergency hospitals. They set them up in New York. They set them up in the UK that were like in warehouses and gyms and stuff, and they were never used. So, I mean, that's pretty wild, but, going back to these NHS trusts and these hospital systems in the UK that have had under five COVID deaths since last March, potentially zero, cause they won't disclose. So obviously it looks bad. So they won't say, you know, but if you read the local media in that area over the past year, they make it sound like things are awful. But the actual data from the hospital system itself is like, nothing happened here. And that's why I really want to touch on the lab leak thing at some point, because I think what happened in Wuhan, the people dropping on the streets and stuff, same thing also happened in Iran and Northern Italy. That was something else, because that wasn't replicated in other cities. That happened once in those three cities. And it didn't spread like a virus. Remember how back with the Wuhan thing, people were, you know, it was freaking everyone out, and people were like, oh, this happened at Chinese New Year. Everyone's traveling, so this has spread everywhere. If it was a virus, that would have happened in every major Chinese city, and it didn't. Why not?
Exactly. There's locations that are very close to this that had like nine total deaths of this whole
process. Yeah, I think I might know what it is. And I think you and I have talked about it privately before, but I'm happy to talk a little bit about it. It's a working theory, but we can get into it later. Well, you pulled this up, so I don't want to hop around too much.
Well, no. I mean, that's what I love about our conversations, and I'm sure people do as well, because it's just the interesting thing about the way that we have these conversations, it's sort of the way that some of these articles will be written, because what we're doing is everything, it's like, oh, and this connects to what we just talked about. And then that connects to this person and that person.
Yeah.
You know, and it paints this picture of how interconnected this is, mm-hmm. but also how, you know, erratic we may be. But it says,
well, it's hard not to hop everywhere. Exactly. But I mean, people like it when we do this. So hopefully it seems like they don't mind, whatever. But at least we get to cover a lot of ground, you know.
I didn't want to really dive back into it. I just want to make sure that people see that what you said is absolutely verified. And here's the actual document I'll include, as it says very clearly how many people have died, you know, and they're asking, and they respond by saying clearly it is the trust considers it 5 or fewer deaths related. And that is staggering. You know, to your point, the media didn't touch that because they pretend to ignore anything that goes against what they're supposed to be talking about. It's pretty alarming. But go. I would love to hear your thoughts on this in regard to what maybe, you know, the end game. Is that what you're thinking or what they're really driving at? What are you?
No. What I was referring to is what I think actually happened.
Oh, in the beginning.
What caused that? In Wuhan and Iran and Northern Italy.
That's
Northern
a good
Italy,
segue
I'm a little less sure why it was there, but if my theory is correct, I may have something for that. But I want to point out that this is just something I've looked into, and Gilad Atzmon is actually one of the people that turned me onto this, if you're familiar with him, and had me ask me to look into some of it. And then I ended up digging and found some stuff that I thought was really interesting. So basically what Wuhan was known for, before we even get into Wuhan and what happened then, I want to point out this lab leak theory thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've talked about this a lot, and I think we have together as well. People talking about the lab leak theory that actually care about where this came from need to talk about the two breaches of containment that happened well before November 2019 in Fort Detrick, Maryland.
Exactly.
Fort Detrick, where the anthrax supposedly came from in the 2001 anthrax attacks, which is also a biosafety 4 level lab or whatever, mm-hmm. In the U.S., had two breaches of containment, was shut down, and Congress was not notified that that one of the top, you know, bioterror and gain of function and all this stuff labs in the U.S. was shut down for two breaches of containment. And this is from their own documents. It's been documented. But Congress didn't learn about it until a local outlet in Fredericksburg, Maryland,
right,
covered it. And at the same time, you have the vaping illness pop up, mostly in Maryland. You have several nursing homes have unexplained respiratory illnesses pop up in Maryland. Sam Husseini, a journalist who lives in the area who covers this theory, had an undiagnosable respiratory condition during this time period in Maryland. It's very interesting that we're not allowed to talk about that, but we're allowed to talk about the lab leak theory, but only if the U.S. is cut out of the Wuhan lab,
right,
when in fact the Fort Detrick was involved with a separate biohazard lab in Wuhan that's tied to Duke University, was directly partnered with Fort Detrick, their medical virology institute. And then you also have, you know, the Wuhan lab itself getting significant NIH funding, being visited the year before by former Fort Detrick commanders, essentially demanding, right, that the scientists there work more closely with the U.S.
It's a U.S. project. The material, the funding, the drive, it's all coming from, you know, that. And this is what you've written about. That's why if you do not discuss the U.S. involvement, even if it did leak out of that lab or it was a bioweapon from that lab, you're being dishonest. And that's
your
point.
Yeah. One of the key contractors there from the U.S. is EcoHealth Alliance. They have tried to cover up. Again, this is Sam Husseini, who did a great report on this. Covered up millions in Pentagon funding. So they claim to be, you know, oh, we're EcoHealth Alliance. We do environmental stuff. Hooray. And all of this stuff. I mean, they're being funded by the military. Why is that? Very interesting. And then you have some DARPA operative being in Wuhan right in January, as a lot of this stuff is going on. And he's tied to a lot of the initial scientists, including at the Wuhan lab, but elsewhere, that were involved in first identifying COVID cases in China and I believe Thailand and all of this stuff. So anyway, I just want to make that clear. So there, I think, based on what I've just said, there was an interest in having Wuhan look like the origin of COVID-19.
Right. I agree with that. And I wonder though, whether or not, because it's obvious there was collaboration between China's government and the U.S. government before all this happened.
Yeah. Oh, sure. And with science, it's very common because China allows a lot of very controversial science, like the gene edited babies that were born in China.
Right.
That's not allowed in the U.S. under U.S. law, but really intense, crazy U.S. scientists included the Gates and Epstein funded Harvard geneticist, crazy man, George Church, has a company in China that's basically making human pig chimeras that the organs can be harvested out of and put in people. Ugh. That's nuts. But that's allowed in China. So a lot of that scientist was over there. Also, Singapore is another place where these scientists, I would call them mad scientists, that aren't right. allowed to do what they do because of laws in the U.S. They go over there. And there's a lot of money, U.S. money, that goes through China. And, of course, you know, the Rockefeller ties to China, the Rockefellers again, you know, Kissinger and the opening of China and all of this stuff. James Corbett's work on that is second to none.
Yeah.
Regarding the ties of the Western elite to the making of the Chinese elite post Mao Zedong. So it's very interesting to keep that into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Including munitions. I mean, he's pointed out how it's basically the exact same arsenal setup, even though they pretend to be these enemies that whether it's going through Israel or not, they basically have.
Yeah, a lot of it does go through Israel. Israel right. passes military tech that the U.S. is co-funding to develop and is supposed to be just for Israel to China, who's supposed to be our biggest adversary. It's happened a bunch. Yep. Why doesn't the U.S. complain about it?
This is my point, though. I think there's more happening here than the simplistic China versus U.S. bad guy thing.
Absolutely. I agree with that, too. But they need it to look like that's not the case.
Well, but here's the question, though. And I agree with that completely. And I would say that probably makes more sense than anything. But is it possible as well that this might have gone awry somehow? Maybe it did make a mistake. Maybe they chose to try to blame it on somebody because it did leak out of Fort Detrick. And you see what I mean? And now you've got China and the U.S. pointing at each other going, no, they did it. And they both know they worked
but
together.
I think let me lay out my theory here about why Wuhan or what I think may have happened in Wuhan. And I think it may have to do with what Wuhan was famous for before COVID-19, which is fentanyl.
That's right.
When Gilad Atzmon, he contacted me a few months ago, he said, do you remember back in the late 90s, the Mossad attempted to assassinate the leader of Hamas in Jordan, and they failed, and they used a poison that mimicked a respiratory illness, and if the Mossad agents that poisoned this guy hadn't been caught in the act, it would have looked like a mysterious respiratory illness, and people never would have known if he'd been poisoned or not. That's how the Mossad designed this poison to be. Yes. they get caught in the act. They're forced to hole up in the embassy, and Netanyahu, I believe, who's prime minister at the time, still is forced to deliver the antidote to Jordan to avoid a huge, major geopolitical issue in the region. Mm-hmm. Right. So as a result, it comes out what this poison is, and it's fentanyl. It's a modified version of fentanyl that's made to look like a respiratory illness that slowly shuts down, or in a matter of hours even, shuts down the respiratory center in the brain over, X amount of hours. And this was in the late 90s, right? So going back to Wuhan, before COVID-19, Wuhan was the world capital of raw materials needed to produce fentanyl. And what's interesting is that there's a particular company, Teva Pharmaceuticals, in 2019. We've all heard about how the Sacklers got in trouble with the mainstream media for the opioid crisis. Right. Teva Pharmaceuticals was about to be hit with lawsuits in multiple states and potentially on the national level by the Department of Justice for fueling the opioid epidemic excessively in the U.S. Their largest shareholder is Warren Buffett, the number three trustee at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Which I think is very significant. But if you actually look at the history of Teva Pharmaceuticals, which is an Israeli firm, their previous owners include Robert Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell's father, an Israeli super spy, and Charles Bronfman, who co-founded the mega group with Leslie Wexner and stuff. So they definitely have interesting ownership ties over the years. But anyway, now it's Warren Buffett. Taking away their fentanyl cash cow would have destroyed that company. And what's interesting, after COVID, they make a big comeback, donating large amounts of hydroxychloroquine and also fentanyl, which becomes one of the main drugs used to treat COVID-19. But what happens in Wuhan is that people start collapsing in the streets. And to me, based on how it wasn't a virus, because it didn't spread to other cities that were making people collapse. It looks very much to be what people in the neoconservative circles are saying is a weapon Iran probably has. That's a modified version of fentanyl. They call a pharmaceutical based agent that does exactly this thing. Okay. That actually Mossad developed in the late 90s. So, basically, you know, this happens in Wuhan, and this, what was once the center of the global fentanyl trade, is now disrupted, and now it's elsewhere. It's not in Wuhan anymore. The whole supply chain for fentanyl gets totally messed up. And why I think Northern Italy was hit potentially is that it was also involved in fentanyl trades, but a lot of it going to insurgent groups like ISIS. A lot of that in Northern Italy, those ports were used to send illegally fentanyl to ISIS and some of these other groups that are, you know, backed by a lot of these same intelligence agencies down in the Middle East. So where else were they sending fentanyl to at that point? But what's interesting is that it seems to have all hit places that were crucial to the fentanyl trade at the time, disrupting the supply chain for the benefit of whom, I'm not exactly sure on that point. But Iran being hit is very interesting because the first case of one of the first cases of COVID of this style of respiratory failure in a matter of hours, people collapsing, happened in an area of Iran that is very rural and not really known for anything, but it is listed in the 1990s in Israeli intelligence documents as being a suspected site of Iran's nuclear program. And so scientists working at facilities there start to fall ill and start to collapse. And the doctors there don't know what's going on, but they hear the news about Wuhan, so they assume that's what it was. And then you have numerous people in Iran's parliament in a short amount of time all die from COVID. Right. I don't know. That didn't happen in any other government, did it? And then a couple months into 2020 in Politico, because I remember reading this, it was talking about how the national security state is planning from COVID-19. And there were CIA people openly being like, well, the chaos in China and the chaos in Iran, we're using that to recruit sources. Ha ha. Right. Very convenient for these guys. So I don't know. Teva Pharmaceutical ends up avoiding all of its lawsuits. Now it's making more money than ever because fentanyl is the main drug is used in a lot of cocktails to treat COVID-19.
Which is ridiculous.
And meanwhile, because of lockdowns, the opioid epidemic is exploding more than ever. So more people are using and abusing fentanyl than ever before. So the people that were accused and about to get caught of fueling the opioid epidemic, which is literally majority owned by one of the main guys at the Bill Gates Foundation, it's nuts. So it I really think people should start looking into this because I don't really think happened in Wuhan was COVID-19.
Let me ask a couple
because
questions.
It didn't happen anywhere else and it didn't spread like a virus. So.
Right. Let me ask you a couple questions about this. Well, one, first of all, it's ridiculous to pretend that giving fentanyl, I covered this a while ago, that there was a push before COVID to use fentanyl in hospitals for people that are struggling. It makes no sense to give somebody fentanyl in a situation where they're having lung issues or having it's ridiculous. Right. But anyway, the point is in the question of the fentanyl being used in this context, hypothetically speaking, how does that work under the theoretical discussion here? So fentanyl is weaponized in a way that can be used to, is it spread? Is it contagious in a way that it'll spread from person
it's
to
a
person?
It's a localized area, not so spreading.
You spray it in the air, say,
like an aerosol.
Okay, okay. So what's interesting about that is that in Iran, remember the whole point, and they never ever figured this out, and was one of the only ones I heard really talk this openly, was it was I forget the term they used, but they could not figure out how it ended up right in the middle of Iran with no traceable out. It was an undetected.
Why did it pop up at a site of interest only to Israeli intelligence?
Right. Exactly. And then the Italy thing, I don't really know how that would jump that, you know.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure either, but there are some fentanyl stuff that was going on there. And I think a subsidiary of some company that produces a large amount of fentanyl, their Europe subsidiary was in Italy and was also about to get in a lot of trouble. I can't remember though. I mean, this was a couple months ago and I was looking into this and I've
very interesting
across the world and a lot has happened since.
Yeah. No, but it's very, very interesting. I mean, first of all, the idea that like this was the first thing that came to my mind during this process, but I was thinking more bioweapon at the time that let's just say it was something that was happening. However, whether it's nanotech mimicking viruses, whether it's a leak, whether it's a bioweapon, whatever, all these things are possible, but that Israel's government was like, this is an opportunity. We could use this right now to do something to Iran and it will get caught under the blanket of whatever's happening right now. Right.
Oh, so yeah.
Fentanyl, it could have been, and that why nobody asked that question is very telling to me. You know,
there were people who thought it was weird. Why is Iran getting so hard hit? Why are so many of their scientists dying? Why are so many of their politicians dying? And this isn't happening in other countries around the world.
Or even collapsing of people, right? This makes your point very valid because that happened literally nowhere else. You can't see that happening outside of these isolated incidents. Everywhere else around the world, people weren't falling.
I mean, if it was a virus so severe that people were collapsing in the streets in Wuhan and people from Wuhan, because of Chinese New Year, were traveling all over China, no other Chinese city had had it like happened in Wuhan. It was obviously something localized, I think. And I think, you know, if we're going to acknowledge that lab leak theories are like okay to talk about, we need to start talking about other stuff to explain what's going on that is obviously being suppressed. And I think there may be something here, especially because now they're saying this is the Brookings Institute, if I remember correctly, saying Iran isn't going to use a nuclear weapon, but they're going to use pharmaceutical based agents and fentanyl to kill people. So that's very interesting that Iran is now being set up to do this exact thing.
How about since we're theorizing, how about this possibility? And we talked about the Fort Detrick discussion, which is very important. And I never even spoke for people on the podcast, maybe. I was showing this a moment ago, just to reiterate that EcoHealth Alliance is still ongoing in regard to the work with HHS. And it's just pretend like it's not.
They're also funded by USAID, which is a CIA cutout.
Right. Back to the lab leak discussion. So right now we're obviously talking about this. I had that other one. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The discussion is, it's over here. Where was it? Apologies. I just want to bring up that. That's confusing. Anyway, I'm gonna lose my place. So the theory. Okay, so talking about this as Fort Detrick first, right? We know, and this is a fact for people that forget this. The Fort Detrick had a leak. That was months before all this, that perfectly timed with the so-called illness.
Two biological agents.
Right.
Someone did a Freedom of Information Act request that came back recently on this breach of containment, and they won't say what it was. They blocked it out.
Exactly. And the good thing to remember is this is also, you could
easily. They won't tell Congress either.
Right. National security, they said, right? But they admitted to one leak every 3 days for 7 years. This was this is open documentation for a long time before this.
Yeah. And then they were shipping anthrax all around the country without the proper protocols for 15 years.
That was one of the things where they said, somebody threw something in a garbage can. And this is not even a joke. And it got out. And anyway, the point is, so we know this is a valid discussion. We know there was an obvious weird outbreak of clusters, even though that only applies to illness, but they called it vaping. We never proved that. Ground glass was passing the lungs.
Yeah.
Right.
But then I sent you this study that came out a couple weeks ago, I think, and it was this AI algorithm they were using to detect COVID-19.
Yes. Good point.
And that said the vaping illness was COVID. Happened months before, November 2019.
I think we all arguably know that this wasn't the vaping. That's the point. And they kind of covered it up. Something was happening there. But so the point is then that to kind of do this quickly, this brushes over into the World Military Games. We have all the evidence of how there were sick people there in the U.S. military. They didn't do social media. They were all underperforming. There was a very weird thing that happened there, right? So the point is it not possible that the U.S. government, in fact, did unknowingly or maybe knowingly spread this, and then it was covered up by using this fentanyl weapon to attack Wuhan and say, look, it's in Wuhan, because they know they did it. And then let's use this opportunity to hit Iran with the same thing. And maybe it got awry or, you know, it's just, again, theorizing. But think about how much sense that makes, that, you know, the evidence of the very entity that's the main culprit for bioweapons, for doing all this stuff, for having leaks in the past. And they clearly have a trail that leads right into this with evidence in the U.S. And then the Mossad decides to, with collaboration of the U.S., decides to use this weapon.
Well, yeah, they often collaborate with the U.S., by the way. I mean, CNA and Mossad do tons of stuff together. Actually, Netanyahu's first think tank set up in the 80s was set up by both the CIA and Mossad.
Of course.
I mean, that's pretty nuts.
So what do you think about the validity of the possibility of something like that?
Yeah, I think it's definitely something worth considering. So on the timeline here, though, these breaches of containment, I'm pretty sure that they happened in July and that the shutdown was in August, correct?
Right. Yes. And it leads right up into the timeline. And I think September was
when I think. What I think is possible is that they remember that Event 201, which games out a lot of the stuff that happened later, happens in October after these breaches happen. And obviously the intelligence community knows and you know, the people that plan these events, the John Hopkins Center for Health Security. I mean, the lady that ran that for years and her longtime underling runs it now, works at the CIA right now and has since, like, you know, for several years. So to be like, oh, the intelligence intelligence community wouldn't know. Okay.
Look at the timeline, though. I'm glad you brought the dates up, because that's
important. Well, I think they sped it up. I think they were like, how do we manage this and bend this to our advantage?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But think about the timeline coming from August to then having outbreaks in September, to then having the World Military Games in October, to having Event 201 at the end of October, to having that lead right into what's happening. I mean, come on. I'm not saying that means for sure that this is the case. But if any detective or honest researcher was looking at this, it's like, well, that's clearly where I'm going to start.
This is worth all this stuff we're talking about. I mean, a lot of it's speculative, but I mean, the stuff I'm citing about like fentanyl and Wuhan and all that, I mean, you can go and Google this. I mean, it's there. And Teva Pharmaceuticals in 2019, all the Department of Justice. I mean, it's all there. Warren Buffett, whatever. Right. I mean, it's there.
That's the only theoretical part, right? That's the only theoretical part is what could have happened. The lead up to this is all verified. That's not to prove that but everything we just listed with timelines, with dates, the places, how it leaks.
This is all worth considering is my point. So anyone that really wants to get to the bottom of this and doesn't just want to use this to feed new Cold War with China stuff, which plays into the hands of the globalists you're supposedly fighting. Just want to make that clear. Right. We should start looking at the stuff. And if you're like, oh, it can't be us, it has to be the Chinese. I mean, no.
Yeah. Well, that's why I just said this. It's an obvious effort at this point, right? They clearly want us to be talking about this right now. And that's why they're dripping this out and asking questions. And Biden's like, well, now, this is what's so insulting to our intelligence. The evidence hasn't changed. It's the same the same base of evidence we had when we were back then going, well, this looks interesting. And they say fake news. Now they're going, well, we're now the intelligence is split. It's like, so what did they review it again?
Well, look. They need this cold war and I guess eventually hot war on China, because a lot of this war is about an AI arms race and an arms race to who can build the infrastructure for the fourth industrial revolution faster. Right. Both governments are on board with this stuff at the end of the day. They are now. What the cold war and the arms race does means we get there faster. The whole world gets there faster. Basically, the U.S. empire and their client states and China and the states where it has influence, because, I mean, either you're a government, you go against the U.S., you have to go with China or Russia. I mean, that's pretty much, you know, how it works, right? You know, it's divided up by these super states. You control what the super states are doing, but you make it look like they're in an arms race and you build. Oh, we have to do it faster because we have to beat China is the excuse. We have to do it faster because we have to beat the U.S. is the excuse in China. And it goes and goes and goes. And before you know it, I mean, it's all the whole system they want is there under the guise of we have to fight the bad guy, but they're both on the same side the whole time. That's right. What this is.
Exactly. Well put. Yeah. Well put. Now I know mildly pressed for time. Let me know. I forget.
It's okay. I've actually got about 40 minutes because Johnny went to grab my daughter. Good. So it's all right. Good.
Well, then we'll jump into some of the things that have since happened. I mean, we could talk about the hacks. We could talk about DHS. We could talk about this going forward, but let me get your thought on this one point, which I think is very obvious. And this is the interesting part about, again, why average people will think about this, that actually show discernment and are able to stand back from the two-party system and think about it. So I said, it's basically note the absence of any discussion of bioweapons, right? They're openly saying, oh, Iran or bad guys, they're going to use bioweapons. So it's not like bioweapons don't exist, right? So it says, and this is even though their own narrative suggests that's exactly what it would be, even if it was leaked, right? How else would you explain this is some new thing? Right. If a leak of Ebola happened, well, it's like, oh, well, Ebola got out. So it's Ebola. We know we're working on it. But this is a leak of something new. So if COVID-19 is a leak, that very clearly implies that they have altered it with gain of function research to make it more alarming and something new. So it's a bioweapon.
Yeah, but I want to point out because a lot of people like to poo-poo the bioweapon thing, being like, well, COVID's not that deadly. How it could be a bioweapon? Well, that doesn't necessarily mean it was engineered to murder people. It could have been engineered to do something else or contain something or for some specific experimentation. Gain of function merely means you're adding a different function to the virus. Most of the time, that means you're increasing its virulence like that, or its transmissibility in a lot of cases that get like media attention of gain of function, for example. But it can just be adding any function to the virus in particular. Yeah. So I think that's worth keeping in mind. It could have still been a lab leak and not like a bioweapon planned for use in mass death. It could have been, you know, engineered for some other purpose or just to tinker with something. Obviously, the breaches of containment that happened at Fort Detrick was something they tried to cover up. So.
Right. And that's an important point. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up, too, is that what's interesting when you take all this Fort Detrick information into consideration is why was Emergent BioSolutions chosen to make the vaccine? OK, because they literally I mean, I wrote about it for T-Lab last year. They have the craziest story, and there's a lot of evidence that they were actually involved in the perpetration of the anthrax attacks in right. order to justify the continued existence of their anthrax vaccine program that was going to get shut down, and that was their only cash cow at the time. And they teamed up with Battelle, a CIA contractor, to do it at the time. And a lot of people, when the anthrax attacks happened, were saying, it doesn't look like it came from Fort Beatrix. It looks like it came from Battelle. And there's a lot going on there. I recommend going back and rereading the Engineering Contagion series I did for yes. T-Lab if you want more information on that. But why choose them? Especially right. when they have, you know, all this stuff, you know, a horrible track record if this was about actually stopping COVID-19 and stuff. It's really crazy. By the way, talking about Emergent BioSolutions, they had the monopoly on Narcan, right? Yep. Until, I think, 2019 or the beginning of 2020. Do you know who made them lose that?
Who?
Teva Pharmaceuticals. Very interesting. So the people that are promoting this fentanyl stuff all day long now are able to mass produce a generic Narcan because they took Emergent BioSolutions patent away. And now Emergent BioSolutions is being dragged before Congress and all of the stuff. Factional infighting is ongoing and people are fighting over the spoils about who's going to get a bigger piece of the pie because these people are, you know, megalomaniacs and totally insane and desperate for more and more power. And that happens, you know, against their supposed friends all the time. I mean, if you remember back to Epstein, some of my Epstein research and what people like Maria Farmer said, you know, Leslie Wexner had his whole house like bugged with surveillance stuff and was watching people everywhere all the time. These people are paranoid and insane. And that's how they live their lives, thinking about how I can get one up on the next guy and all of this stuff and blackmail this guy, even though he's supposed to be my friend or my brother-in-law or whatever. You know, this is what they do. Right. And so, you know, this also happens on a company-wide level as well. So Emergent BioSolutions was allowed, you know, in for a reason. And the guy that was put in charge of their quality control thing has no experience in that. And was instead a key military intelligence operative in Iraq and Afghanistan and all that stuff, doing a bunch of shady military intelligence joint CIA stuff. And they put him in charge of the vaccine factory. Okay, makes sense. And then it batches or destroys a bunch of vaccine batches for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and people are surprised. Right. I mean, they've botched everything for years. Ever since they've existed as a company, they've botched stuff and are probably responsible for at least the second phase of Gulf War syndrome. So, these guys are criminal, and it's been known for a long time, and they should have been shut down decades ago.
Exactly, which then speaks to the criminality of the groups that are working with them still, knowing that that's the reality, right? I'll be sure to include your series on that because it's very, very relevant to what's happening today. It's what's
going on. The lab leak theory, I mean, go back and read that stuff and be like, can I only blame China? No, and we need to see the bigger picture. This is a transnational thing going on. Right. And if you just want to keep it in, the Chinese are bad and the Americans are good, I mean, I don't know. Stop listening to someone that's like a Navy military intel plant like Jack Posobiec and get your news from people that are actually like honest brokers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, because there's obviously a two-party, and I mean, there's plenty of people out there that probably think they're doing the right thing too, but are still stuck in the two-party illusion and driving one angle of this while openly ignoring the U.S. because they've decided the U.S. government's good no matter what. You know, it's like this childish kind of mentality. But the point being back to this is the interesting reality that it doesn't just because if you call something a bioweapon, it does not then imply that it was designed for the, you know, like this is something that tweaked using gain of function, which there's loss of function, there's gain of function to your point. The gain is to add something more dangerous. Loss would be to make it less virulent for other reasons or, you know, remove things it could
do. Or not necessarily more dangerous, add something that does something else or has this effect on the body or, I mean, they're experimenting with tons of stuff. So it's really hard to know and they won't say what it was. So we don't know what it is.
Exactly. But the point is that they could simply be adding something to this to test for something else without the intention of it going out, but it still makes it a bioweapon. Right. That's the point. But let's get into the other discussions about some of these things this was the other point about, I want to include this before in regard to China, that just to make your point even more clear, Rand Paul fighting against this and pointing out the reality, as we all see from the two-party illusion, now says we're only banning it for China. Shocking, right? Because that is the point. It's not, if he cared about protecting Americans, he would ban it in general, not just only for China.
Yeah, I know. Right? It's, you know, Rand Paul's not his father, I mean, that's for sure. But at the same time, you know, a lot of the violence against him has been really nuts. And the fact that, like, people on Twitter are allowed to be like, oh, it's awesome that his neighbor almost killed him. Like, that guy rules and more people should, like, try and murder Rand Paul. And that's not taken down on Twitter. But if you talk about the lab leak theory too early before MSM acknowledged it, you're kicked off. I mean, what the heck? I mean, that's really messed up. You know, I mean, obviously, I don't really like any politician, but the guy's a human being. And, you know, I mean, inciting violence is inciting violence. And if you're going to create a whole pre-crime network and because of domestic terrorism and violence against senators in the Capitol building on January 6th, and you can't, you know, do anything about this, I mean, that's that pretty much shows you how hollow that agenda is. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But yeah, the anthrax letter thing is really interesting. So we don't know if it's an anthrax letter. It could be ricin or who knows? I mean, there's lots of white powders it could be, but the note contained within the letter implies that it was some sort of a deadly thing. And it was obviously, you know, at the very least an anthrax hoax letter. It's worth remembering during the 2001 anthrax attacks, not all of the letters people received from the anthrax perpetrator. It was definitely, if you listen to experts, it was a whole lab of people making that stuff. Not just one person. But anyway, there were several letters. Some of them were harmless powder, some were not. But what's interesting, remember back to the anthrax attacks, there were senators targeted. But what did those senators all have in common that got anthrax letters?
Resistance
blocking the Patriot Act. What do you know? And what did Rand Paul do right before he got this letter? Said he's not getting the COVID-19 because the COVID vaccine because he has natural immunity.
But let me ask you this. That was my first thought, too. Like, so it seems like, of course, it's him because he's the one resisting. But this feels more planted than anything else now based on
could be. But I just think that's an interesting corollary there that the people that got the anthrax letters then did that. And some of them got really on board. I mean, Tom Daschle got in with the whole Robert Cadlett crew and is still there after getting the anthrax letter. I mean, he got very involved with them afterwards, you know, and I think he was even at Clade X, one of the John Hopkins Centers. Pandemic simulations in 2018 and stuff. Like I said, very, very involved, you know? I don't know.
You got the message, right? The message that if you want to not be threatened and attacked and, you know, that join the side, right? I mean, or there was just coercion. He didn't realize it, but if you're aware that these people are willing to do something like that, what would your choice be? You know what I mean? If you're in a position where you're completely exposed and your family's at risk, you know, it's like, you understand that we call it the JFK talk, you know, like it's interesting to at least consider that there are people that are being threatened like that and they're well aware of it, you know?
Yeah, man. That's why I think Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is one of the bravest people around, regardless of if you agree with him or everything or not. I mean, I think he's a really stand up guy, but I mean, he openly talks about how he thinks his dad was killed by the CIA.
Right.
And then he still does what he does and gets smeared and attacked. And some people are calling him like a, you know, setting him up to be like a domestic terrorist QAnon guy, which is madness.
It's crazy.
Madness. And I mean, wow, when something like that happens to your dad and you acknowledge that and you're still willing to put, you know, your reputation and all that stuff and do this kind of work. I mean, yeah, that takes a lot of courage, dude.
Very much so. I respect him immensely for that regard. I mean, and what's fun, and this is kind of a good transition to the vaccine discussion, is just that he is somebody who is adamantly not anti-vaccine, and that's what's so
that's a smear campaign to discredit what he says, right?
They call anybody who even expresses the most mild criticism of this, even hesitancy about, like, well, let's just wait a minute, they're immediately anti-vax, anti-science, crazy madness, no matter what. And these are PhDs, as you want, we all know, you know.
But these people refuse to acknowledge that the definition of vaccine has now been changed also, in addition to the definition of herd immunity and all of this stuff. I mean, they flipped it all around, and that the mRNA vaccines aren't vaccines by the normal definition, and these mRNA vaccine companies before COVID-19 called them gene therapies.
Right.
That's what they did. And if you look at the agenda that I was talking about earlier about, you know, moving towards this new era of medicine and all of that stuff, I mean, they need the mRNA stuff. That's a key part of it. You know,
I agree completely. Mm-hmm. The platform.
And it's to normalize that type of technology that they wanted to implement at the beginning anyway, acting like it's a regular vaccine when it's not, and making people think it's a regular vaccine when it's not, so that when it comes around again, they're like, oh yeah, just keep editing our genes forever or whatever. Right. You know, I mean, it's like,
it's normal, right?
It's to normalize that type of medicine. And the same thing with telemedicine and all of this stuff. And they're doing it across sectors, you know, tele-education, teleworking, all of the stuff. They're trying to take everything into this fourth industrial revolution, the bio nano transhumanist world, the more than human world is what they want to call it.
Exactly the point. Nuts. Exactly the and point. Here is here,
the UN in March of this year. Going back to this article that John Klizek, sorry if I'm saying your name wrong, is going to have up on my site. The UN put out a report in 2021 openly talking about their planning for the death of schools, to eliminate schools forever, and that kids are basically going to be data mined and like used to fuel all of this stuff they want to do. I mean, it's really nuts. So like, you know, they're basically coming for your kids. And if we can't figure it out with schools, if parents around the country and around the world aren't going to wake up to that, I don't know what will wake them up. They're going to shut down schools and they're not going to open them back up. That's the plan.
Hmm. Yep. I mean, and that's
and they're admitting it. And why can't people push back against the UN thing and be like, no, we don't want that. But apparently it's conspiracy theory, but it's a UN freaking paper. And they're like, this will happen by 2050. No more schools ever.
Right.
It's nuts.
I completely agree. There's the one I've talked about before in regard to converging technologies, right? I mean, this is the same thing where they're talking about combining these things. There it is. And they've openly discussed this for a really long time. You know, the idea that they're going to combine technologies to alter evolution for 20 years. The other point that I was going to bring up was this new evolution, speaking back to the platform point, about how they're building this new direction. They're building out the platforms, which won't require safety testing, won't require, they just pump in the new data and spit out the new thing. And they're already making one for an Ebola design. But they also mention here that, by the way, we've already got one going for COVID, right?
Well, also the BioNTech guys that did the Pfizer vaccine, they're openly saying, cancer's next.
Right, exactly. And it's all
they're like, cancer's the big thing after COVID. We're already making vaccines for it. Some of their vaccines are funded by the Gates Foundation already. They're pretty open about what's next. I mean, this isn't something that's going to go away. And I really hope people can start to see the larger agenda here.
It's a nanoparticle design. And nanoparticle platforms, right? This is the same point across all these things. It's nanotechnology, evolution, revolution, you know, the whole thing. And it's about designing this. So, I mean, in this actually, we could jump over and talk about the spike protein since you brought it up earlier, because this is the biggest part for me that is alarming, is that they're coming at you from 1,000 different angles. The mRNA vaccine has not even been approved. It's still experimental. We're still testing it. And yet we're already stepping past it to make new versions of it. It hasn't even approved yet. Now, this is not the exact same concept for this one, but it's a same idea. They're using nanotech, they're using platforms, they're using genetic manipulation, and they're using this to still come back to the spike protein point. So it makes you wonder, what's the real point? The cancer discussion, any of this, is it just about getting something like this into everybody's bodies? I mean, if we're not talking about
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, what is it?
Go ahead. This whole HARPA thing, you know, I wrote about it a couple weeks ago on Unlimited Hangout, on this whole plan to create this health advanced research project agency modeled after DARPA. This was originally dreamt up by an ex-DARPA guy that ran their BTO office, their biotechnology office, which is openly about merging the biological and the mechanical, the machine stuff together. The way they're framing it now and the way the Biden administration's framing it, by the way, it's going to be headed up basically by Eric Lander. They're already saying the Epstein funded crazy guy who also has all these ties to Silicon Valley and the same type of medicine, and his whole institute that he ran since its founding is like heavily funded by Eric Schmidt, and Eric Schmidt's chairman of the board, and he's the National Security Commission on AI chair and ex Google and running the smart city stuff in New York. Oh my God. It's just, it's just so never insidious. Ends. Anyway, the way they're framing it is cancer. And they're already saying now, well, because of COVID-19, no cancer screenings happen, so there's going to be an epidemic of cancer. I'm sure you've heard this.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that. And so, you know, but what if the mRNA vaccines actually caused something like that? Or, who knows? I guess we'll find out. That may explain why they're so insistent about, by this time, we need to have this percentage vaccinated. Because if you remember back to, like, the glyphosate trials with Monsanto, that was only approved because they knew exactly when certain symptoms that look bad started to appear in mice, and they cut off the end of the trial right before that could happen. When it surprised me if this is the case then, because they're literally setting up the thing where cancer is the next COVID. So they need an explosion in cancer cases for that to happen.
Well,
how is that happening? I don't know.
Possibility. I have an interesting thought on that. And let's talk about the spike protein next, because this seems like the obvious thing. I have this up just because I don't want to forget to talk about these things that we've discussed that you have been vindicated for. But the discussion of the spike protein is interesting. But here, have you looked in or researched the discussion of two things: self-amplifying mRNA vaccines or self-spreading human vaccines, which
I've seen it mentioned, because you've covered it and in some stuff, but I haven't done it, on my own. But you know what we do know, right, is that a lot of this stuff isn't studied on the long term, and its effects aren't known, right? And also, we know that in previous cases, when they did try and develop a vaccine for coronaviruses, they all failed. And they've been trying ever since the SARS epidemic. So obviously there's like something weird here. And the push to vaccinate is very different than past cases. And they're changing the definition of herd immunity and doing all the stuff to get people to take the vaccine en masse. And that's just very different than any other sort of mass vaccination drive. And even doctors that are actually openly pro-vaccine, but are honest or are questioning why it is this way, because it's actually not very scientific when you actually bother to look at the nuts and bolts of it and, not just be like, oh, I don't want to be anti-science or called names. Time to man up, people.
Yeah.
You're going to get called names. Sorry. Happens to me all the time.
MIT did that great study that really completely finds that the community, specifically anti-mask, as they're calling it, are in fact far more scientifically literate than half the people screaming anti-science. Corbett did a great cover on that. But back to the point about this, the self-amplifying, I want to just stress, I was going to grab it real quick, but I don't want to take too much time trying to find it, that these are valid, real discussions that are currently being tested. I've had the clinical trials up. Self-amplifying mRNA, I find very, very interesting in this conversation, because specifically, it turns out that self-amplifying mRNA vaccines were the first iteration of this to be discovered, or version, or whatever you want to call it. Back in the, I don't want to misquote the date, but decades ago. And weirdly enough, and today that's being pointed at as the next step, even though it was the first one that was discovered. And then they,
interesting.
And the big difference is that self-amplifying mRNA, you know what they do? They continue to produce spike proteins. Mm-hmm, what does that sound like? An endless, continually, it sounds like cancer.
Point out, by the way, this mRNA vaccine technology, Moderna and these guys didn't develop it. This was DARPA, and Moderna, heavily subsidized by DARPA and all of this stuff. Please go look it up. I wrote about it last January.
Right.
Big surprise. Right.
Speaks to the larger agenda. I mean, these are things that they
talked about making the human cells with these mRNA vaccines. They say biofactories for whatever product or protein or chemical you want, essentially. Right.
I play that clip all the time in the beginning, where the guy goes, essentially what they're trying to do is turn your cells in your body into drug factories. This is Pfizer. This is what they used to, when they were openly talking about this stuff before COVID and it became fake news, right? It's obviously what they're all trying to accomplish. But I just think that the idea of the self-amplifying thing, at least, and the point was, they're currently testing on chimpanzees right now. It's open in the world. So is it possible that this could somehow get out and continue to kind of self-amplify, which sounds like a cancerous kind of a thing. Cells that continue to amplify itself and grow and grow.
Yeah, that sounds kind of like a tumor, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Uncontrolled cell growth. It's a little odd. Yes.
I'm not a scientist, but my point is that it's interesting to see that is that weird transition to cancer. Anyway, it does speak alarmingly to their agenda to get this thing in everybody's arms, regardless of herd immunity or natural immunity or anything else, or the fact that people have a 0% risk. By the way, I don't know if you saw my recent coverage on, there's a meta-analysis done of 134, I believe, different studies that all research the infection fatality rate around COVID. They find that children under the age of 10 have a 0.0002% risk. Under 25, you have a 0.01% risk. Under 25 years old. We're not in danger, is the truth, right? And that's what's so
They're saying you need to get vaccinated to stop the pandemic, because we won't reach herd immunity until everyone is vaccinated. But they've changed the definition of both herd immunity and vaccine for this specifically. And the fact that they're trying to have, in some places, children no longer need to give consent or need to have parental consent to be vaccinated. That's very disturbing. And it's just a continuation of this effort to take parents out of medical intervention decisions for their children, and basically cut them out. And it's very disconcerting. I would argue it's a part of a broader push to replace parents with the state, basically.
Yes.
which has been, you know, sort of ongoing for a long time. And there's different facets to that, of course, but definitely something that's really alarming. But, you know, whatever will cause this epidemic of cancer cases, maybe it's just the screenings, and the screenings will be like, yes, you have cancer. Because a lot of these screenings, by the way, I wrote about this last September, Google and the U.S. military teamed up together to develop an AI algorithm that looks at your chest cavity and tells you if you have cancer or not, or something like that. Why are they doing that? Are we going to trust Google and the military if that's what's rolled out? And is this AI thing developed by the military and Google, which is a military contractor set up with NQTEL money with a bunch of intelligence ties since its beginning, and Eric Schmidt's company, you know, and all of this stuff to create, you know, I mean, it could just be like what happened with the PCR stuff with COVID-19, create the illusion of a cancer epidemic. It doesn't actually have to be actual incidences of cancer. You know, we have to keep all of that in mind. They could just do the same thing again. And all they have to do is make enough fear porn of, oh, it's the cancer. You know, we'll see what they end up doing. It's interesting.
Exactly. It outlines, I was planning on going over this in a future show. There's a lot in there, but it goes into the discussion of transitioning to AI for all of it. Like any diagnoses, any, you know, like you're talking about telemedicine, the idea being that we just trust that the algorithm and the AI itself are accurate. Like you're saying, it's a centralized control point for all this information, which is what they're always trying to make and create.
Great. Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of this desperation to get everything AI, that's not just happening in healthcare, but they talked about how in 2019 and 2018, it needed to be healthcare where the first push was going to be for this. That was their plan back then, way before COVID. It's because they're desperately trying to trigger the singularity. They desperately want self-aware AI. And I think the reason why they're scrambling now and tripping over their narratives and all this stuff like we talked about is that they thought they would get to the singularity sooner. And what I actually think is the case is that the singularity is not going to happen. And I think that for a couple reasons. First of all, they're so desperate to trigger this, and they think, oh, if we just feed it with enough data, you know, we'll get there and whatever, but they're not necessarily filtering out low quality data. So if you look at things like Microsoft's effort to create a realistic AI chatbot that, you know, if that worked right, they could put it in robot dolls and whatever that they're already making and all of this stuff, and in the Sophia robots and all this stuff, and make it more human, right? A humanized AI and all of this stuff. Well, that AI chatbot, based on the data it was trained on off the internet, became basically like a 4chan neo-Nazi super racist because it was trained off of, you know, just whatever's on the internet. And a lot of what's on the internet, obviously, you know, you and I are like researching stuff on the internet that's information dense and very different than what a lot of other people use the internet for. But, you know, the internet is full of like dumb stuff. Porn and a bunch of other crazy things, cat memes and videos. So what kind of AI, super intelligent AI, are you going to train on that crap when that's what you're feeding it into? And people's social media posts and all of this stuff. That's what LifeLog, which became Facebook, was designed to be. LifeLog was originally not just set up to profile dissidents and all of this stuff, but to humanize AI by giving narratives to different events. But I mean, people say stupid stuff and don't act necessarily on Facebook like they do in real life. You're not going to get the same thing. It's going to be a flawed copy, and they can't get it to where they need it to be. And the more they realize that, we always thought like, the singularity was going to be this. And they basically worship this idea of creating the super intelligent machine so they can like merge with it and all of this stuff. I mean, look at people like Google's futurist Ray Kurzweil, who was part of the Epstein Linked Edge Foundation and all of this stuff. I mean, this is all they're just obsessed with this stuff. I mean, it's like a religion for these people.
What do you think about the possibility that was planted in that way? Right. Like, I mean, it's certainly possible that they're just this incompetent with the way they're doing this, or that they just made a mistake, but it seems kind of counter to argue this is a super intelligent thing and that it can't manage to discern between, I don't know. It just seems
awesome. I think AI can do some stuff.
Last thing that almost seems to suggest, or that almost seems to completely drive forward the narrative they're trying to push in regard to the Capitol and everything else, that the internet is dangerous and this AI proves it and we have to control it. Otherwise, people will end up like this crazy AI. I don't know. I don't know if I buy that.
I haven't heard that narrative, though, about the AI chatbot stuff. I mean, they kind of tried to sweep that under the rug, and I haven't heard it tied into the domestic terror stuff.
It doesn't have to be necessarily. It just has to be there and maybe circle back to and be like, yeah, I don't know.
But in order for them to advance the fourth industrial revolution, they need AI to be at a certain point, and it's not there. Not there yet.
So
AI can do some stuff better than conventional technology systems, but it can't be a person.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what they're trying to do desperately is to get it to like be a person, and that's just not happening. And it's very possible that it will never happen, no matter how much they try. This is a huge key component to their whole thing, is to have the super intelligent machine intelligence. And it's very possible they'll never make it. And
maybe that's the point of all of this is to create some kind of human mesh. Like that, I mean, talking about all this weird crossover and the nanotechnology to where it can basically tap into human intelligence. I mean, that's not that far-fetched to think about.
I mean, it's hard to exactly know, but if you look at these transhumanist people, I mean, they basically see it as humans need to merge with super intelligent machines.
That's my point.
That's basically what it is. And for these people, they want to have an elite upper class of augmented humans who are superior to an underclass of humans that, if you look at stuff, this has been openly acknowledged, even in the BBC, they talk about this, the splitting of two species, humanity's going to fork, and there's going to be the elite, attractive upper class and the squat, goblin-like underclass that whatever. I mean, yeah, I mean, this is the vision of this eugenics crap.
Eloy's and that. Murdoch, right?
And you have, you know, the World Economic Forum, Mark Zuckerberg's best pal and all of this stuff. You've all know a Harari talking about how it's going to be the elite and a global, the exploited class, and then a global useless class. And the people that don't get the technology stuff to be little servants, exploited servants are useless, and it's better to be exploited than useless and all of this stuff. I mean, obviously the exploited class, I mean, Eric Schmidt and those guys aren't going to be a part of that. They have a different vision of what they'll be. And they want to put their brains in the cloud and upload their consciousness in the cloud and live forever and all that stuff. And they can't do that without the super intense AI. And so their whole dream is going to fall apart because they're literally crazy people that don't understand anything. And a lot of them, you know, are Epstein tied and Epstein funded. They're obsessed with like having sex with little girls, and they're trying to reimagine the future of humanity. Like they know what the freaking thing they're talking about. And they never mentally or sexually matured past the age of like 12. Mm-hmm. And you like, they're total creeps, and they think that like, oh, we're so smart and we have all these theories and we sit together at like the Edge Foundation and talk about how smart we are. You know, it's not going to work out. I mean, these people have like obvious brain worms and are obviously not normal people. A lot of them are pedophiles,
they're
not normal people, psychopaths, and sociopaths. Right. And so, you know,
right. Well, the AI discussion, let's just say, looking at it as if artificial intelligence and the singularity is their sole goal, hypothetically speaking, doesn't it seem likely that you could create a situation where whether we're talking smart dust, which we've already discussed in the past, is clearly has the capability to mesh and connect with other smart dust in other locations. So is it not possible that they're creating a situation where this AI can utilize the internet of people, right? I mean, they're talking about the internet.
They want that. They want that.
Is that not possibly what we're doing right now?
But a lot of what they want there in terms of that end game is like a hive mind. And in order to have that hive mind, though, you have to make the virtual world just as compelling as the real world. And that depends, again, on super intelligence AI that can mimic
I'm not talking about a artificial reality. I'm talking about using the reason I'm talking about this is because I've seen the studies that talk about, we just talked about the ferritin discussion with this new thing that can control your brain, access your brain. So is it not possible that this is something that's being built so it can access your brain, right, in a way that can then utilize information to grow the AI. I know this is theoretical, but that sounds like a very compelling thing to research.
Well, I mean, DARPA has the N3 program that's almost finished. I mean, it's on schedule to be finished, I think, this year. which is about using non-invasive technology to read and write into the human brain using magnetic particles injected into the body and electromagnetic fields.
Exactly.
And stuff like that.
And that, but, that's you know, things we're seeing
that today. Only works if enough people get the injection.
Okay. Right? Okay. So exactly mm-hmm. the point. So the aggressive drive to get this in everyone's bodies. The fact that if they don't have enough, they might not be able to, like, it's certainly something that's interesting and very scientifically possible based on the studies they've already done.
Yeah. But I'm trying to talk about long term about, like, you know, if they don't ever reach the singularity, a lot of what they plan farther down the line isn't going to work because this creating a complete virtual reality for people to live in is a longer term end game here. That goes beyond this current phase they're trying to usher us into, right? So if they never get the singularity, that virtual reality will never be compelling enough.
Exactly. Is this whole process a means to that end, to lead to the singularity, to then lead to the creation of what they're trying to create?
They think so, but will it actually trigger that? You know, can a machine actually, these people don't even really understand. They think they're the smartest people in the world, but look how badly their whole op with COVID and all of the stuff has been messed up. I mean, these are the people trying to create and design super intelligence. I mean, a lot of times they're idiots. And the only reason they get away with it is because they have mainstream media covering their ass. And because a lot of people are still asleep at the wheel, but that's not going to last forever. Mm. They're actually in a very dangerous spot, I think.
It did feel clumsy. It felt very clumsy, very rushed, very forced.
Yeah.
So why do you think that is?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with Epstein getting arrested. I don't think they expected a lot. Well, this is just my opinion. And the Fort Detrick stuff, it happened around the same time, oddly enough, the Epstein arrest. And, you know, Epstein arrest was a controlled op or whatever. But apparently, according to, the Farmer sisters, one of whom is one of the people involved in the Ghislaine Maxwell case, Epstein was arrested because statutes in New York law changed that allowed him to be prosecuted. And they were facing some major issues in that particular district, especially with NYPD, if he wasn't arrested. So, I guess they didn't want that to happen for various reasons. And I guess they thought they could control the narrative more and that it wasn't going to be such an explosive story and capture and maintain public interest for so long, because even after Epstein's off the planet or whatever, it's still even now still generates headlines with Bill Gates and all that stuff. Something they couldn't control either. So I think things were starting to unravel, and in the case of Epstein, they very clearly tried to control the narrative on that as a huge way. Oh, it's just this one nasty billionaire. Just look at him. But now he's gone, so everything's fine. And then people complained enough and didn't buy it. And that's, I would argue, the only reason they went after Ghislaine Maxwell was because people kept being like, well, what about Ghislaine? Obviously, she's just as guilty. True. But they can't go out. They can't let her get off.
They even brought in the guards now again. I saw that recent thing. I think that's just to keep people away from what's happening with the vaccines and the whole push. It's like, oh, look.
Well, currently now.
Because you all wrote about it. It's clearly what happened. They didn't fall asleep. They clearly lied. We all know that, though. So it's a limited hangout to a degree, I think.
But what I would argue with the Epstein thing is where they prevented stuff from going in a lot of cases was the science stuff. They did not want that in the tech stuff, his ties, not just to Bill Gates, which I guess is open season now, but multiple Microsoft executives who were obviously compromised in the same way he compromised politicians and all of this stuff. What does that mean for Microsoft products and all of this stuff when you consider that Bill Gates had ties to Isabel Maxwell, Ghislaine's sister, who was involved in the Promise software scandal with her father, Robert Maxwell? Doesn't look good. A lot of crazy stuff there. So, they can't have a big scandal like that for Microsoft because Microsoft's such a key player in this vaccine passport stuff and this cryptocurrency mining thing and this future they're trying to build. And, Klaus Schwab said it in January, we have to build trust this year. So a key player in this whole thing, Microsoft, you can't have public trust totally eroded and have that what should be a huge scandal come to light there. I mean, it's honestly a bigger scandal than Promise if it was properly investigated, to be sure, because they Microsoft openly recruits people from the Israeli military intelligence, including some that have no technological expertise. Actually, the head of Microsoft Israel for years, Shelley Lansden, was recruited straight out of the IDF and admits that she had knew nothing about computers. Why did they hire her? Why was she put in charge? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I would say it's obvious to anyone who has brain cells to rub together. You wouldn't put an IDF member with no experience at the top unless there was an obvious military intelligence effort happening through Microsoft.
And to what I'm talking about, the compromise of top Microsoft officials, my last report on Unlimited Hangout about Bill Gates and Epstein and what it really means for Microsoft, and how the reason I would argue it's open season to dunk on Gates, but not talk about the documented ties of him to Epstein and the Maxwells before 2011 is to protect Microsoft. It's about keeping that scandal from getting bigger. They're trying to control it just like they did with Epstein. And so, Gates is going to be the fall guy. And maybe in the case now, we might see Fauci have a fall from grace or something. And they'll be like, oh, we fixed it. Please keep trusting us as we continue to build this dystopian hellhole for you. I think we need to start looking at the bigger picture here for sure.
I still very strongly feel that Charles Lieber and the work he was doing plays a role in this.
But it's hard to know, isn't it?
Viruses. Well, nanotechnology mimicking virus.
But we don't know exactly what his role was. That's what I mean.
We don't. Mm-hmm. But the technology, it's just impossible to ignore.
Very interesting timing.
Yeah, with China and the material. It's like there's something to that there. And it just seems odd that it gets shuttled away. Where is he right now? Like, no one wants to talk about. Oh, it's very strange to me. But now that we're getting close to the time here, I wanted to wrap up by talking about some of these things. I'm really just, let me just finish with this in general, because this is such an obvious one that that you specifically covered. We talked about on the show that it was way before this was even discussed, before the vaccine, the injections had even been like outside of these supposed trials. They're telling you pharmacovigilance, you're going to be tracked for 2 years. Now, the argument is you want to make that about trial subjects. But I think we're seeing in real world time here that that's not the only thing that's happening.
No, but these contracts weren't for trials that I reported on there. And this is from the Wall Street Journal interviewed Moncef Salawi, who was head of Operation Warp Speed. And in that article, he says, very precise tracking systems are going to be used to track people who got vaccinated, and it's pharmacovigilance is the word he uses for it. And then he also says later on that Google and Oracle were given contracts for it. But if you go through the Warp Speed contracts, which were initially funneled through a CIA cutout anyway, that also has ties to Dark Winter and the whole anthrax stuff. God, it's so crazy.
You can't help but laugh.
And we can't talk about Fort Detrick now with the lab leak, even though look at when this happened before. I mean, geez, it's nuts.
Real quick to that point, just make sure people recognize that they called this the lab wherever it came from, fake news forever, censored people. Now it's like, well, kind of now we can look at this, but Fort Detrick is just as valid. Or how about the leak that happened in Russia around the same time frame? There's another discussion we should have. It's all because they want you looking at Wuhan, right? We all see that.
Yeah. Anyway, so I got a lot of crap after this article because once the vaccine started rolling out, people were getting the physical cards and they were like, yo, they're not tracking us. That's, crazy. But now it's come out in the UK. Well, actually, they have been surveilling vaccinated people, at least in the UK, and they were doing so in order to that's a different one.
Yeah, I know.
They were doing so in order to see people's behavioral changes post vaccination. So it's surveillance to study something, but not necessarily the effects of vaccine on COVID or whatever, like regular pharmacovigilance is, which is about side effects or vaccine efficacy, basically stage 4 clinical trials being pharmacovigilance, right? This is checking behavior people based on their cell phone data. To think that isn't happening in the U.S. when they gave contracts to Google and Oracle to do just that. Well,
the important part about this specific article and in the UK is they report that it's not just about, like, they track specifically what you like, how much you move post vaccination, whether the day after you leave your house, like it's really specific in regard to, obviously they're going, is this person okay? Are they getting up? Are they going to work? Like it's an experiment. They're tracking whether or not you're struggling through this. It would make no sense to track whether or not they got extra active afterward. Like, what does that even mean? It's about whether or not you're struggling. And of course they say 1 in 10. I don't like, what do you think about that? I find that to be laugh out loud ridiculous. Why wouldn't they just track everybody?
Well, in that same article, the government person says, we're just taking all this anonymized data for cell towers. They don't say there's any limit to that.
Right. And remember, the UK.
Plus, they all suck it up anyway. GCHQ, like the UK's NSA, sucks everything up and analyzing it just like the NSA does in the US and all the Five Eyes guys do. It should be pretty obvious. We're all being surveilled anyway, and they're finding new ways to surveil us. This is, I would argue it's, you could say it's to normalize it, but when the Wall Street Journal says there's contracts on the books to do this in the U.S. and the head of freaking Warp Speed says they're going to do it, and you're and then, you know, you're going to be like, oh, you made it up, you crazy conspiracy kook. Well, no, dude. And now it happened in the U.K. You don't think that's happening in the U.S.? The U.K. and the U.S. do like all the same crap.
Well, this is confusing, your point you just made. Like, how is it even possible that someone can go, oh, that's fake news, yet simultaneously be aware that the NSA is openly taking information from all of us all the time? We all know that. That's been very clearly discussed for our safety. But yet this doesn't make
cognitive
sense.
Cognitive dissonance. I don't really know else to explain it at this point. Right.
It's a choice. I think a lot of it's two-party politics and people just choosing to decide that they're going to go along with it because it makes more sense for them and so on. But a lot of this stuff has a lot of what we have previously discussed that we have been censored for, AstraZeneca, blood clots.
Or demonetized for, we were taken off of Patreon.
Exactly. And that's the main point, is they're so desperate to stop genuine, objective discussion about real data, scientific, peer-reviewed, random controlled trials, that they will try to cut our revenue. They'll try to censor us from platforms. And I don't think they know what to do right now, because there's other platforms coming up. We're still squeezing through with our pirate streams and whatever else. You know, it's just very obvious that I think to your final earlier point, that we're going to see this get worse before it gets better. They're going to become erratic and irrational. And because look, they're losing a massive trillion plus, you know, trillions of dollars over years have gone into this. There's no doubt. So they're going to lash out.
Well, keep in mind, I think it was William Blum, the late historian that said this, like whatever you think the U.S. government is doing right now, I can guarantee what they're actually doing is way worse. Mm. So they're going to get really erratic, because what we know about now, what they're actually doing is probably way worse. Not just how it tends to be. Yeah. So they don't want that stuff to come out. And the whole point of them doing this and trying to set up this dystopian tech powered hellhole and all this stuff is to maintain the status quo where they are on the top forever. And they have the little pleb class below them that they can control, manipulate, and do whatever they want with. And basically go back to the feudal areas of the Middle Ages and just, oh, yay, we're the kings and these are our servants and whatever. But have it be like a technological form of enslavement so that people can never rebel against it. Yes. So to maintain that status quo indefinitely, if they feel that they're going to lose that before they can implement their fail-safe system to keep it forever, they're going to go nuts. Yeah. And it's going to be really wild to see that play out. And a lot of things, I mean, definitely things will get crazier before they get better. And I think that's why people should definitely make preparations for that. These cyber attacks that they've been doing, we don't have time to talk about it today, but truly... next time, they're going to get worse and they're going to be more frequent. You know, this Colonial Pipeline thing, in another couple months, they're going to do the next one. And then it's going to be a shorter timeline. That's how the WEF has described this whole cyber pandemic, they call it, going, cascading cyber attacks that get progressively worse and closer together over time. It started with Solar Winds. Now we're at the Colonial thing. And it's just that timeline, that period of time between Solar Winds and Colonial that we had then, in the past couple months is going to get smaller and smaller, the attacks and the disruptions of the supply chain, which is already really squeezed. If you follow Ice Age farmer Christian Westbrook's work, you'll be very familiar with this. Really great work. You'll be really familiar with this. It's just going to get really more intense. So make sure you and your family can prepare to the greatest extent possible that you're able to weather the storm. Because, you know, basically at this point, and this is my opinion, this is about sort of outlasting the elite's temper tantrum as they fall away. They'll probably try and take as many people with them as they can because they're crazy and they're mass murderers. We know this. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, but definitely worth trying to keep, yourself and your family protected and sane through all of this as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is always a good thing to do, regardless of whether this push for the Great Reset is happening. You need to be prepared. Now, on the note of the Great Reset, because that's obviously,
well, I do have to go soon.
Oh, no, there's real quickly. You drop off. Go ahead. I just want to make sure people know that today and I will be speaking at the greater reset. And this will be today. You can check the schedule. I'll put this in the show notes. It'll be with Derek Bros doing a panel, Journalism in the Age of Big Tech Censorship, at 3:25 p.m. Central Time. Make sure you tune in for that. It'll be a great discussion. Whitney, thank you for joining. As always, I love talking with you. More coming, more articles. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. And the T-Lab audience will be seeing more of me. It was just the past couple weeks when I've been pretty ill with everything going on and the crazy move I had to do and all of that that sort of had me that way. So hopefully you'll be seeing more from me here and, you know, on my own site, Unlimited Hangout, soon.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being here. And as always, everybody out there, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.